It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, and we have in the studio today, helping out with this, Lee Hendrickson.
Hey, Terry. Good morning.
Hey, how are you, Lee?
Doing well. I think my voice is a little stronger than Mike's right now.
So she's going to be talking more, and I'm going to be listening a bit. But I thought, I think you were able to listen into the Palmer City Council, and actually it was Lee that was streaming that meeting this week. So maybe we should begin with that before we turn to the storm clouds that are brewing about the budget and things like that.
Oh, boy.
So
cold wind blowing from Juneau these days.
Right, or from the governor's mansion.
Yeah.
Right. I was at the Palmer City Council meeting, and before the meeting, one of the council members was chatting with me. She said, yep, we're spending money tonight. And they did spend a lot of money that night, all on good things and some budget readjustments. But, you know, if you want to have a livable city, you want to have streetlights that work and a truck for the wastewater treatment plant. Those are all on the consent agenda, and as well as other things they did. Probably the most interesting thing was the snow blower, the sidewalk snow blower.
Yeah, so they did spend a lot of money, but I guess we should also say that, you know, Palmer has a different budget cycle than everybody else, and they finished their budget in December, which means their spend really starts in January.
Right.
And at the first of the year, which is a little bit different than everybody else because their budget starts July 1. So the rest of the borough is, and the cities are in the end of their budget cycle. It is the beginning of the Palmer budget cycle.
Yeah.
So for some things, that's really good, particularly something that was on the agenda later after the snowblower. And we'll go back and talk to that. And that was the teen youth center that they gave a sizable step into. So I think that is part of it, is the fact that they look like they're spending a lot of money, but it's because they finally have their budget done.
Right. So, January 1, they start spending money for this fiscal year.
Right. So the snowblower. This has been something that's been bubbling up, Lee. You and I both know that. For those of us that live downtown Palmer, it's been a concern for a couple of years, I think, more so this year than before, about the snow that's being left on sidewalks and the increasing amount of population that are walking downtown.
Right.
My husband and I were talking about it last night, and we've seen a huge increase in just the almost 10 years we've been here and people that are walking. We thought once the Fred Meyer was moved to the other side of the highway that might change the pattern, and maybe it has a little bit, but there's still an awful lot of walkers and bikers in downtown Palmer.
Right. I think it could be the changing way people are choosing to live. I mean, as more and more data comes out about the health benefits of walking and riding your bike and not sitting so much, maybe people are choosing to move a little bit more.
Yeah. And we should probably talk about a little bit about the self-challenge, really, after the last week before that the city of, or the Councilwoman Sabrina Combs and Councilwoman Julie Burbrick decided to take Gil Penalosa up on his suggestion, and they go a week without a car.
Right.
And that may seem to be a pretty easy thing to do in Palmer. Sabrina lives in downtown and works over at MEA, which isn't too far away. But
yeah.
She started to walk the first day. She videoed every day that she took the challenge for a week, which was really helpful about her insights. And as someone who, you know, has gotten the way a lot of us jumped in her car to get from here to there, she was a little surprised at the state of the sidewalks.
Right,
when
right.
she started, rentered out that first day.
Right, because it was the day after the snowstorm and the sidewalks aren't prioritized. Julie and Sabrina are the two council members who participated in the Livability Challenge.
Right.
We'll be in the station tomorrow morning talking about it.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, that'll be great. Well, we'll save their insights for then. I think that speaks well to them getting out there. And, you know, I think we have to put those glasses on of other people sometimes to just see, because even though they chose to do a week without a car, there's a lot of people that don't have any other choice but to be without a car. The cost of maintaining a car is thousands of dollars a year. I think I've looked at the latest data, around $9,000 to $10,000 of income a year. And people just can't afford it on the incomes that they're on. And so that's an area that they've cut back.
Right. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the city and its priorities for removing snow, because city manager Nate was at Palmer Chamber yesterday and talked about the snowblower and talked about the city's priorities for snow removal. And in the past, the city has not prioritized sidewalks. And so now we're at a point where I'm not sure how it's done, but helping the city relook at its priorities for snow removal and prioritizing sidewalks a little more, perhaps. You know, because the plan is they plow the snow the first day off the streets onto the sidewalks. So the sidewalks become the berm. And then they come back. So there may be a day or two or three that the sidewalks aren't usable because that's where they put the berm.
Right.
Because 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it's like you just expected people were going to drive.
But what I've noticed in the last week or so, since Sabrina and Julie have begun their work, and there's been a discussion of this, that the sidewalk areas that were neglected wasn't just because there was a plowing and it was there, but it was almost as if no one ever did come back to clear that out.
Sometimes that's true, yeah.
And that's not... Yeah,
I think we have to talk about not only the right tools to do the job, and I love that you went up there and asked that question, Lee, about where the four-wheelers used to be, because they were here the first year I lived here, the four-wheelers with the plows on them, but also the personnel. I thought the manager did a good job of pointing out that we have four people in our public works department. Four. That's an amazing low number. And one who is dedicated, as I understand it, to doing public walkways, which would be the city building and the library and those type of things, and sidewalks. And if you think about that, you know, people plan vacations, they have leave, they get sick, they have family caregiving obligations, they have kids. One person that does that. Now, the city of Wasilla, bigger footprint, couple thousand more people, but seemingly less sidewalks. They have three people.
Right, three people doing sidewalk
carrying.
Three
people. Yeah.
Right.
So it's really a question of, I'm glad all this is coming out, because I think people need to know that it is a capacity problem, and that getting the right equipment, which it sounds like the manager has done his due diligence in getting a piece of equipment that will work and enhance what we've got, because it not only does snow removal, but it also does some de-icing, which is always a problem with the wind and snow that isn't removed. But you still have personnel.
Right.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how that comes out.
Yeah. I will note that the Public Works Department isn't that thrilled about the snowblower. Because when whoever's riding on it, it's a stand-up ride-on machine, and there is no protection for that person. So if the wind is blowing like today or something, and they have to be out clearing, they are exposed to the elements. So it's like there's all these trade-offs you have to make in decisions, and how do you find the right tool, and how do you,
with the money that you want to spend. Yeah, but that was sort of my question, which shame on me for not asking and being there, but could they spend a little bit more money to have a more enclosed piece of equipment? Now, I know they're limited because we have very slim sidewalks. You may have seen one in Anchorage, I think they have three pieces of equipment there, which are bigger, that are going around, and it's kind of like an inside tractor type thing. Mm-hmm. They blow snow off, but that's for 10-foot sidewalks, and we only have 6-foot sidewalks. So he was limited a little bit in what he could have had. Now, there is as I look through the in the packet, it starts on page 97 of the packet, if people are interested in this. It talks quite a bit about the model, but there are some attachments, and one is a soft enclosure. So they could buy that, you know, to see if that would help. But, I don't know. I hope so. I hope that it's more ideal than it was. And if not, you know, maybe the demand will come across and people will enjoy what it is done, and they'll decide to expand on that. And maybe, you know, I've said many times, I would pay a little bit more in if there was a downtown zone that would take care of that sort of stuff, and that I could count on. And maybe that's something we need to, people will start to look at. But there is a cost, and I think the city has always been conservative in what they spend. And this is the same approach that they're taking with their piece of equipment.
So one interesting thing, I was talking with Councilwoman Berberick afterwards, was is there an ordinance on the books that people are supposed to clear the sidewalks in front of their homes or their businesses? And I believe there is. I would want to check with the city on that. But there's a little conflict there. If you clear your sidewalk, the city comes through and plows and throws the berm up on it.
Yeah, that's what happened to us this week.
Yeah.
The way I understand it is most of these sidewalks were built with federal money. And when you build your sidewalk, you have some caveats that come with that. And the caveat of what the research that I've done to this point says that you have to have an ordinance that says that people will clear their sidewalks. But if you don't enforce it, which means if you don't ticket people or you don't, you know, give them some type of a warning for not doing it or something like that, you're out of federal compliance for doing that for your, you know, for the federal grant to have made those sidewalks. But the problem, I don't know the problem is all in clearing. There's been some suggestion we should get together a snow brigade and people should come out and help each other out. That's the way it's always been in Palmer. And there's some validity to that, but there's a lot more people in Palmer now, and there's a lot of people that are commuting and not working in Palmer. So not a lot of people are home. There's a lot of elderly people in Palmer. There's a lot of disabled people. So you have to think of all that. But it's also snow removal, because, like you say, you know, it is an ordinance, I'm pretty sure, that says you're supposed to, when you do clear walkways and driveways, it's supposed to go in your yard. But the walkways are not the owner's yard. They're the public's yard. And so it's snow removal more than anything that is kind of the big problem here. Whose snow is that?
Right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the ongoing discussion is about the snow removal and who's responsible and maybe how do we shift priorities so we still have good roads for all the commuters, but we have better access for pedestrians.
Right. And how they educate the public. And I think this did come up. And this is going to be their challenge is if they are going to pick priority routes, which I think probably makes sense, not every sidewalk is going to get cleared, then they need to do some education and there needs to be some resources that people can quickly look at to say, oh, am I in a priority? Why is my sidewalk not being done? And people that don't have any sidewalks, that still becomes a problem of where do people walk? Mm-hmm. So there's a whole other question of do we start finishing off some of our neighborhoods that don't have sidewalks? And then you get into the other part that of parking and, you know, what is the responsibility of the owner to get their road, their car off the road so that the plowers can do their job? You know, a lot of times I think what happens is that, and maybe this is mentioned, is that people, when it snows, move their cars because they think, okay, the plower's going to come, and then they don't get right there because, again, only four people, and they move it back after the snowstorm, and then they're in the way. So it really does take educating and really kind of looking at other cities. What do they do? We're not the only place that it snows. How can we enhance the information we're giving to the community so they understand? Does it take a robocall? That's easy enough to do. To say, hey, the plowers are going to be out tonight. You need to move your car. Don't forget to, you know, do your walkway. I mean, there's all kinds of pro things they can do. So we've talked that pretty good.
Right, right. And so now Mike wants to go on to the next topic, which I assume is?
Well, I think they touched upon the question of taxes, online monies. Did they bring that up?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so the way they talked about it is the AML is doing sort of a study or plan for how to do that with cities and asked for a donation from the city of Palmer for $5,000. And there was a little bit of discussion. This is seed money, one-time money, so we are in the game of helping to shape policy in Alaska. And to give a scale of things, we were asked to Palmer was asked to donate $5,000 to this study. Wasilla was asked to donate $10,000 to the study. So hopefully AML will come out with something in the next month or two to help us figure out how we're going to do sales tax for online retailers. And basically, if an online retailer registers as a business in the city, we can start collecting sales tax. And they have pretty granular data of which addresses are in the city limits. Mm-hmm. And if your P.O. box is in the city limits and you receive a package there from an online retailer who's in the city, like Amazon is a registered mm-hmm. business, you will be charged sales tax.
And, of course, this has already been going on. Mm-hmm. My understanding, to the tune of about $9,000 a year into the city's coffers.
Right. For people that may not be familiar, AML is Alaska Municipal League, and it is something that the cities do pay a membership fee to be part of. It's sort of their lobbying group. They protect the grants and community revenue sharing, and they kind of get together, to try to advocate for cities, which they're going to be needed this year after the budget yesterday. Amazon is the big gorilla in the room, but the trickier part is the third-party sellers.
Right.
People will know sometimes when they order from Amazon, it'll be sold by Amazon, distributed by Amazon. It's Prime. Everything comes from that way. But in other instances, it comes from these third-party sellers, and that is going to be a bit of the challenge. The manager did a good job, I thought, letting them know how they've approached it in the past, kind of what their how difficult it is to get from out-of-state vendors, that they intend to send letters to people and ask people to comply. And I thought that Sabrina Combs did a good job timing in, because there was some reluctance, mostly on David Fuller's part, to even fund the $5,000 for AML to do the study, which they're going to contract the study being done. That's what the money is really for. And she said, wait a minute, there is a plan here that they plan to have a meeting. She is part of the board, and they're going to have some information in July, and there is going to be a work product that comes out of it. So I think that they're concern about throwing away $5,000, which is not a small amount, but for a city in the city budget, not that much. It should bear some fruit for them, because they do need to kind of stand together on this. Right. Now, what the manager is worried about is that of parity, and that some communities will want to tax groceries and some won't. And a lot of that'll interfere with their own sales tax. And so he's got some good ideas on it. He seems like he's on top of it, but it is something to watch.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, I noticed.
My paper is snow removal.
Uh-huh, yeah. And I noticed when I did a purchase in January, I looked at it with the manager, and there were three items on my invoice from Amazon, and two of them were from third-party sellers, and the other one was from Amazon, and that one had sales tax.
Yeah, all 13 cents.
Yeah, 13 cents. It was not an expensive item.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So were there any other items on the Palmer City Council agenda that are worth doing before we spend a little bit of time for finishing on the first cut of the budget?
Well, just a couple of quick things, Mike. One is that there are two empty seats on the Parks and Recreation Board.
Right.
And they filled one of them tentatively by appointment, I think, Monday or Tuesday night, but they have had trouble filling a quorum. So there should be at least one seat available on that. So that, for listeners, that's a good thing for people to do if they have time, is to volunteer to sit on these boards and commissions and give ideally the council some guidance on what they're doing. I thought that the conversation about the Pioneer Cemetery was interesting.
All right.
A gentleman by the name of Dennis Hammond, who is the president of the Pioneer Cemetery Association, came to say, you know, in 10 years, folks, we'll be out of space. It's been going, surprisingly, the cemetery has been going since 1936.
Whoa.
They started out with, I think, 3,000 plots, and they have about 700 left. But there's no place to expand. That's the problem. And he said that we need to have sort of a plan. And he's not there looking for anything. You know, originally this city gave 5 acres to start the cemetery. And in 1985, they gave him another 5 acres. So it's a 10-acre plot. But again, no place to expand. And, of course, not everybody is, as he put it, planted. There are people that have bought plots there. But there is a, you know, there's sort of an end to that. And this is kind of a crisis all over the country,
right,
a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
So we're not alone in that. But I think that was really timely for him to come in and make them aware of that.
Right. And I'm trying to recall what he said about the cemetery in the city of Wasilla. I think that's near capacity as well.
Well, he said it became full. One of them, whatever one he was talking about, became full and they walked away from it.
Right.
And it needs. And it is sort of in disarray, which is a rather sad thing. It is, again, may require some thinking, good thinking here on what do we do when that happens? Because it's certainly in the time frame to happen with as fast as an aging population as we have and that sort of thing. And then the other thing I think is just that the Yak is reopening for kids. I understand, I've never really heard an address for this, and I was surprised in their application for a community grant there wasn't an address, but it sounds like it's down by Humdinger's.
It's in the same building as Humdinger's, yes.
Okay. And but what they were saying, the city gave $5,000. It sounds like they've had a lot of in-kind donations, and that they plan to be an active part of the community, and actually that space is only going to be open from 2 to 6 for kids for after school, and that they plan to use it for community space. I'm sure they'll add a fee for it, but it does add another place to meet.
Right.
Just amazing how that into town is just
growing,
really working up, growing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's at 173 South Valley Road in Palmer.
Okay.
And
okay.
Their anticipated opening day on their website right now is March 1st.
Okay. Yeah, they've been working on it. They were closed for a while, and seems to be a purposeful place for kids to have something to do. And with so many parents that are now commuting and moms that just don't get the ability to stay at home, sounds like a valuable thing to have. So good for them.
Right.
And it's
Just a reminder, it's for teenagers, and it's open 2 to 6 Monday through Friday. So it's a place for kids to go hang out after school, have things to do, structured activities, socialize.
Right.
Okay, so now we have 3 minutes left.
Oh, my gosh.
For a first reaction. And let's focus on the governor's budget pieces that seem to directly affect cities, for example. Maybe we could start there. We know that there will be cuts in... for the city of Palmer, for example, one of the cuts that I understand would affect the Pioneer Home and Pioneer Homes in Alaska. So that would be an immediate impact. And when we're talking about all of these things, the other thing I've noticed is that the details are there in broad strokes. So it's a broad stroke detail, but not down to saying, okay, what does this mean for Palmer's Pioneer Home here? Is it going to be shut? Is it going to be reduced significantly? What is the actual likelihood if the proposals for the budget were to go through as they appear now? Of course, a lot of pushback on it, and I'm thinking that in weeks to come, we'll be having a lot of that detail and we'll be able to go in there. But in the last 2 minutes, comments, Terry.
Well, I don't think we know very much. As you said, Mike, it's a broad brush. It looks like their recommendation is that people that are going to say they're definitely going to have to pay more. It is subsidized for low-income people that can't afford it, but we just don't know. But I will say that the Senate first look at it from the legislator's point of view, and it's a rocky start here. The House is still not organized to have a speaker to actually have fruitful conversations and vote on these things. But the Senate finance hearings start today at 9 o'clock. That's where I'll be listening today. And you can stream it at on the 360 North website or KTOO public TV, which is also looking like it's going to take a big cut, and see what the first reactions are from legislators. It's going to have some significant cuts. Community revenue sharing is down. The cities are, transportation has been cut. Schools took a really healthy whack. And healthcare in general took a healthy whack. And there is just no way that it's not going to affect communities. And in some ways, Palmer and Nemetsu may be affected greater than other places because we rely on small business. And if people don't have the optimism to start small business and keep going and expand their businesses and aren't, and the school district can't support contractors that work for them and do work, and the borough, and they're so strapped like that, they're either going to have to go to the property taxpayers, and there's been a lot of resistance to that, or we're going to go out without a lot of services because the cuts have been pretty deep over the last couple of years, and these are more significant than ever.
Well, I think we have just run out of time. Lee, do you have a last comment? Citizen Lobbyists, thank you very much. It's a fascinating discussion today. We'll be looking forward to next week.
Yep. Feel better.
All right. We will. Take care.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.